So, Hare Krishna, after this somewhat intense presentation, we will now go into the actual practice of the Bhakti Rasayana Shlokas. I will want to give you a little summary of what I wanted to bring over to you as my respected audience. I wanted to say that that one can easily miss the whole point of practicing Krishna consciousness if one does not come to the essential element of engaging the mind in Krishna service. Absorb ourselves deeper is possible by following the footsteps of and role models of the great devotees and do like them. And in the end, I wanted to say that as we are entering now these very sweet and deep subjects, which are described from many different sources, also different Gaudiya teachers, it is important that we keep our iron in the fire where Krishna has arranged for us, and that, in other words, that we remain in the training of Srila Prabhupada by understanding deeply his moods and perspectives, and in this way develop congruently and steadily and not in a zigzag fashion, which is not good for our growth. Good. Who of you has ever done guided meditations? Please raise your hands. Good. This meditation, or the Bhakti Rasayana verses, start with three verses from the Brahma Sanhita, which make it very clear that what is described is not taking place on the mundane platform of experience, but in the total, let me say, in a different realm, the spiritual realm. This has also been made clear in the work of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, of which the Bhakti Rasayana Shlokas form the end part. There in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, second part, you find a journey described which takes you from the material to the spiritual world, which takes the hero from the material to the spiritual world. So true to this system of training, bringing the meditator on a journey, the Bhakti Rasayana Shlokas also take us on a journey in the beginning. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, residing in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha resembling his own spiritual figure, the embodiment of the ecstatic potency. And then it said, please repeat after me, Govindam Adipurushang Tamaham Bhajami. Govindam Tam means him. It's a third pronoun in Sanskrit, which means the Lord who is a little distant. It doesn't say, I worship you, Govinda, which is an address, but it says, I worship him, Govinda. The idea of a journey is brought in the first, the idea of a distant place is brought to us in the first verse, where the Lord in a total transcendental form is there, surrounded by his expanded parts, which are Srimati Radhika and all the other expansions, her gopis. To make this point more deeper into our mind, the second verse of Bhakti Rasayana describes the progression. Lowest of all is located Devidam, the mundane world. Next above it is Maheshdam, the abode of Lord Shiva, which is in between the material and spiritual world. And above Mahesh Dham is placed Hari Dham, the abode of Hari. And above, that means the Vaikuntha worlds. And above this is located Krishna's own realm named Goloka. In Vaishnava spiritual writings, this progression, first step, second step, first place, higher place, then a yet higher place, is very, very common. And also in Bhakti Rasayana shlokas, we are brought in the first three verses from the material world to the spiritual world. I want to do now with you a little meditation, and our sound will come immediately. And I would like you, while you're hearing this, to close your eyes and to do exactly what is demanded of you by Prabodhananda Sarasvati Thakur. I will read directly from the book. And you will do something which is very important if you enter into meditation. You have to leave your present state and go into another realm of perception and reality. Do you know that even the pujaris have to do this? Before the pujaris enter the sacred space of the altar room, they have to do a meditation called Buddha Shuddha meditation. Buddha means the material elements, and Shuddha means to purify from yourself from the material elements. If, see, Krishna consciousness cannot be understood if you take it like a baby literature. That is, you bring your baby concepts on and project them on spiritual concept. You have to free yourself from mundane consciousness to enter the spiritual world. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, when he comments on taking a bath at Radhakund, that this bath is not so effective if you just dunk your material sweaty body into the sacred waters. He was even saying he was not doing it because he felt his feet were not properly situated at the Radhakund. He said, we must take the bath in our spiritual body. This is very important for spiritual practices, to leave the material platform and do something on the spiritual platform in the kingdom of spiritual understanding or Krishna consciousness. So please get ready, sit down. You will be very surprised by what you hear now.
Raga dvesha jnanam yahi yahi bhagavan nama matra pratapat dvaitam dehari vismaraya sakalam Atas purayestu yate tat vismayata sandashaya madura mahatas rasyat puta aviskrityata brindavanam upanaya me nagaro goranilo. Give up all anatas, such as attachment and envy. Give it up now simply by the influence of the Supreme Lord's holy names. Give up all qualities born from the material body, your beauty, your gender, your whatever qualities you have. Now try to manifest transcendental effulgence within your heart. Remember that you are part of Krishna.
who is Sachit Ananda Vigraha. You are not the body. You are part of the Lord. You are eternal like Him. You are full of knowledge like Him. And you are full of bliss. Your body is far away. You are understanding now that you are soul. Thereafter, try to experience the indescribably sweet effulgence present within that transcendental effulgence. Fix your mind on the abode of Vrindavan, situated within that sweet effulgence. We will do this by just meditating about some sounds of Vrindavan which are right now here, except for the tractors or whatever. What do you hear? Voices of birds. Is only one type of bird or are there different birds' voices? Try to distinguish. Are some of the birds' voices near and others maybe more distant? Try to tune your perception. And then realize in your mind's eye, maybe coming from the Govardhan Hill, the fair and dark-complexioned divine couple. The divine couple is unique in their youthfulness and supreme beauty. Their attractive forms bewilder even Cupid. They naturally possess unlimited energies. Yet they themselves remain fully absorbed in the transcendental mellows of ecstatic love in Sri Vrindavan. And they do not know anything else. Now in your mind's eye, see the young gopis who are beautiful and expert. Meditate on the young maidservants. They are expert in various arts and are enchanting. They are decorated with transcendental garments and ornaments. And they are fully absorbed in the transcendental thoughts of their beloved divine young couple. When you are ready, please open your eyes. Now, I'm very much aware that, obviously, you can't make such a rash course in meditation.
Usually there are many things which help that to calm down the mind first and prepare the mind. Like the Haribhakti Vilas mentions breathing exercises, which work very nice. But here on the sacred land of Giriraj, I just feel maybe if there is an interest later, I will get maybe a feedback of you. Then we can see if we want to make a breathing exercise and do something like this. But here we are. We just want to show you something, give you something, which according to your liking, you can engage in your own spiritual practice. So the first three verses are Brahma Sanhita verses, which help us to do what we have just done from a verse from Prabodhananda Sarasvati. They take us from the material to the spiritual world. The next 11 verses, and we will not yet hear them, are verses which are spoken by the spiritual master of the universe, Lord Brahma. He talks in a general way about Goloka Vrindavan. And also Lord Brahma, 11 verses, are quoted clearly with the intention to make us understand that Vrindavan is clearly non-material but spiritual in its content. And I would like to enter the Bhakti Rasayana verses really for the first time. We have done this yesterday. Now, I want to read to you the Srimad Bhagavatam verse 10, 14, 33. What we will do is, we will hear it one time, then I will explain a little bit, and you can take notes, then there will be a little pause for you to look at your notes, and then we will try to hear the verse again, and let pictures come to our mind according to what we have heard and according to what comes. Yeah? Is it clear? So we will now not be so meditative. We will be now absorbing. This is the sponge period. We will try to get as much information as possible, note it down either in our notebook or in the notebook of our heart, where we can remember everything, and then we will hear it in a meditative way. We will hear again the verse, we will first hear the verse in a melodious way. Esham tu bhagyamaima chutatavadashtam ekadashaiva hivayam bataburi bhaga etatrishikashasakerasakrit pibama savadayongriyupadaya Madvanta Samte. Lord Brahma says, yet, even though the extent of the good fortune of these residents of Vrindavan is inconceivable, we, 11 presiding deities of the various senses, headed by Lord Shiva, are also most fortunate because the senses of these devotees of Vrindavan are the cups through which we repeatedly drink the nectarian, intoxicating beverage of the honey of your lotus feet. Lord Brahma very confidentially
talks here about his experience of Lord Krishna, which is an indirect experience. The demigods, as you have heard many times, are in charge of different senses, and they perceive what Gopal sees through his eyes. They also perceive what Gaurangi digests today. In this way, all the senses of all the conditioned souls are presided over by the demigods. Now, the inhabitants of Vrindavan see only Lord Krishna. And therefore, the demigods are very happy because they say the senses of these Brijbasis experience the Supreme Personality of Godhead all the time. And we are so fortunate because we are linking up with the Brijbasis and we get the juice through the Brijbasis. Do you see how this verse encourages us strongly to follow the examples of others to get an experience? Do you see how the verse encourages us to see through the eyes of others and hear through the ears of others? This will be one of the guiding principles of our processes. The Vrajavasis have purely spiritual bodies. And the demigods, which are here discussed, are spiritual demigods. There are there are reflected demigods in this world. You must say Chandra, Surya, and of course Brahma and Shiva. They are in this world, but there are also spiritual Brahmas and Shivas who have descended from the Vaikuntha world to the material world. Who have descended from the spiritual world to the material world. And the spiritual demigods, Chandra, Surya, and of course Brahma and Shiva, who have descended, feel proud to share the sense experience of the Vrajavasis. They feel very happy. These Vrajavasis are so wonderful. Shiva presides over the ego. The Vrajavasis have an ego. The ego is, I'm a servant of Krishna. Surya presides over the eyes. The eyes of the Vrajavasis are very special. They always see Lord Krishna. With their ears, they always hear Lord Krishna's glories. And with their tongues, they always chant Lord Krishna's glory. The tongue is presided by Chandra, the moon god, who's in charge of taste. So the Brajbasis have no material ego and no material senses. They have purely spiritual bodies. And the devatas who are in that spiritual realm, they get the nectar through the cups of the Brajvasis senses. The nectar means especially the nectar of Lord Krishna's lotus feet, whom the Brajvasis always see. A little while ago in Vrindavan, there was another Bhakti Rasamrita lecture, and there it was explained that there is an unspoken contract between all the residents of Vrindavan to never destroy the imprints of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. In other words, wherever Lord Krishna has stepped, that will remain. His stamp on the earth will be there. Who knows some of the impressions of Krishna's lotus feet, which are visible in the dust of Braj?
Govinda Mohini.
octagon. Govinda Mohini has really learned the imprints of Krishna's lotus feet. You have forgotten on the heel, he has a fish. This means that the fish-like mind of the devotees, who is always flickering and will find only shelter in the nectar ocean of Krishna's pastimes and lotus feet. Hare Krishna. Like a fish cannot exist on the dry land, in the same way, the mind of the devotee can only exist in the remembrance of Lord Krishna. So these footprints are never stepped over, not even by ants, who usually even go into rooms uninvited. They don't even go. Even the wind will stop before the imprints of Krishna's lotus feet and go another way, so that he doesn't make the imprints disappear. Because Krishna is so wonderful, and everyone loves him in Vrindavan and respects him naturally. So the nectar of Krishna's feet has such a nectar that even his footprints in the dust is respected greatly in Vrindavan. Now, the demigods, Sanatana Goswami says, can only experience one aspect of Krishna, that is either his form or his flute play, that means the sound which comes from him, or his wonderful fragrance. Krishna's fragrance, they can only experience through one of the senses. You know, one demigod is in charge of one of the senses at one time. So they envy the Brijbasis very much, who can experience Krishna through all of their senses. And they say these Brijbasis are by far superior even to the spiritual demigods. So after having glorified the Brijbasis, Brahma comes to the next verse. Actually, about this verse we will not meditate because it's a little difficult. But here, Brahma is saying a prayer.
Tad puri bhakyam iha janma kim apyatavayam yat gokule pikata mangri rajo bishekam yat shivitam tunikilang bhagavan mukundas tvadya piyat padaraja shutimikyameva. Brahma prays, my greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth, whatever, in this forest of Gokula, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. So, this birth which Lord Brahma wants, he is very unchoicy. Unpicky about it. If I would ask you out of nowhere, Sitaram, your next birth, you would like to take it where and how? Nadia Bihari, your next birth, have you ever thought about it?
Narayani, your next birth, where would you like to take it? Maybe as a pilot? Doesn't know. It's very difficult to say. Jagatarini, your next birth, please. Have you thought deeply about it? Yeah. Your next birth, Anita-chan, maybe in a Japanese shiatsu college where you could really learn the art? Gopal, your next birth, please. It's interesting, isn't it? A question. Don't answer it because it is confidential. Usually if we would think about our next birth, now most of us are not so spiritual, we don't even think about these things. But those of us who think about such things, I think we would be a little picky. Like, next birth, oh God, do I have to think about it? Can I think about it? Yes, you can think about it. In fact, you should think about it, because whatever you think of here while you're practicing your sadhana, you will get in your next existence. So, here Lord Brahma is not at all picky when it comes to Vrindavan. He says, this is Sanatana Goswami's comment, my birth can be even as a blade of grass or other lowly beings. That blade of grass, I'm not attached that it's in one place. It can be even in the wild forest. It can be even where the cows and cowherds live, Sanatana Goswami says. I don't want my next birth in a big spiritual pilgrimage city or the Tapovan. Brahma's only condition is to always serve Krishna's lotus feet in Vrindavan, by serving the devotees of Vrindavan. He knows Krishna has appeared in Vrindavan and is eager to display his supreme power, beauty, charm and also compassion. And he knows Krishna is the life and soul of the residents of Vrindavan, for whom nothing other is important than Krishna's lotus feet. And he knows Krishna always submits to the desires of the devotees in Vrindavan. So he wants to be connected with Krishna by the devotees of Lord Krishna. And he knows it's a high desire. Therefore, he better doesn't make too many conditions. If I, for instance, wanted to become a member of the Vaishnava Training and Education group here in Vrindavan, I would know it's a very high desire, because I may not be very qualified. I would say, but take me in whatever capacity. I can be the washerman of the students. I can be the cook, and so on. So Brahma is very careful. He wants so much to come to Vrindavan that he doesn't care for any great particulars. Anywhere is all right, as long as I get the dust of the residents of Vrindavan, and in this way the mercy of Krishna. It's a nice point, isn't it? So let us now try to hear the verse again. I will give brief informations in the beginning. Hear it in a reflective way. My greatest possible good fortune, says Brahma, would be to take any birth, whatever, in this forest of Gokula, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. Thank you very much. So, Brahma now starts towards the end of Brahma will say goodbye in a few verses from our meditative process, but before he does so, he gets very much into thinking of the Brijbasis. He really glorifies them and really thinks about the mercy which Krishna must have shown them. And I would like to now talk about this very, very wonderful verse, which is very much like a verse which Uddhava has spoken in the third canto, and talk about Krishna's mercy, because I feel this is very important at such a mercy place. The verse goes like this.
Esham goshanivasinam utabhavan kim devarate tinash cheto vishva falat falam tvataparam kutrapyayammo yati satvishad iva putana pisakula tvameva deva pita yat Tamata surit priyata matana pranashayastvat krite.
Brahma says, I'm confused. My mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon the residents of the coward community of Vrindavan. But you have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated only to you?
Now, this is a very, very important verse. Previously, Uddhava had also said like this, I can't understand. Putana came as a demon with the intent of an assassinator. She had a planned assassination. You know, every step was planned. How to enter the victim's house and how to deceive the protectors of the victims, and then how to kill the victim. It was a planned assassination. Ooh, these are very bad people, assassinators. You know, the world has just talked about a few of them, and the terrorists of the 11th September and so on. It was planned, and therefore the world was shocked. Putana was planning to kill God, little Krishna. But still, Krishna accepted her in a completely different way, as a mother, and was drinking her breast milk, and later gave her the position of one of his mothers in the spiritual world. She became one of the nursemaids who offered the child fresh milk. Now, this is, Brahma says, I can't understand. If you have given Putana
this mercy, what will you give to the bridge buses? I mean, it should be comparatively higher. And it's very interesting if you follow here the purports of Jiva Goswami. Putana just disguised herself like a devotee. They are disguised devotees, but the Vrajvasis, the Vrajvasis have given everything to Krishna. Yesterday, our Burijan Prabhu has said something which apparently totally contradicts what we hear now. Burijan Prabhu has yesterday reminded us that you can practice, that you must practice, that your attitude must be fine-tuned in Krishna consciousness. The external activities don't matter so much if the attitude is not right. He wanted to help us to fine-tune us while we are here. And he gave an example. Yashoda came to breastfeed Krishna and Putana came. But obviously, we would not say it's the same. One had a mood of a loving mother, and the other the mood of an assassinator. So Burijan Prabhu helped us yesterday to work on what is also a subject of our discussion here, that you must go a little bit deeper in Krishna consciousness than just the external activities. You must start to fine-tune your mind. And he definitely gave a wonderful point there. Here, now, we hear that Putana was only in the disguise of a devotee, and still she was accepted. Jiva Goswami said that Krishna wanted to teach a certain point with this Leela. By killing the Putana witch and granting her the position of his nurse, Krishna really began his merciful manifest pastimes on the earth. He did it right at the beginning. Jiva Goswami says, this pastime is attracting the devotees to the sweet attribute of Krishna, like his compassion and the protection of his devotees. In other words, here Krishna doesn't look at the qualification of a devotee. Isn't that comforting to us? Krishna doesn't look at our qualification, because so much we didn't really bring. It's not so much. We still have so many material thoughts. There are prayers by devotees who take account of this mood of Krishna's giving mercy without looking how much does he deserve. There is a prayer which was often said by Jagannath Das Babaji. He said, My Lord, if I think of your quality of being Bhakta Vatsala, the friend of your devotees, I'm extremely sad, because I will never experience this quality since I'm not a devotee. But if I think of your quality of being Dinabandhu, the friend of the most fallen, then my heart dances in hope, because this I certainly am. Interesting prayer. Rupa Goswami has said, in a similar vein, where he does not, where an undeserved amount of compassion comes, he said, O destroyer of the demon Agasura, my heart is in flames of despair when I hear of the difficult spiritual practices of saints of old times like Shukadev and Ambarish. for I am totally without devotion. I can't do these practices.
But when I hear from the scriptures and the sadhus that the waves of your compassion are flowing towards everyone from Brahma down to the lowest creature, the drops of nectarian hope cool my heart and pacify it. If I hear of your mercy and your compassion, I'm relieved, I'm happy.
If I think of the spiritual practices, how some saints attained you, I become totally frustrated because I never can do them. Nice, huh? This unconditioned mercy of the Lord.
Now, here we are also coming to Giriraj, Krishna, who's Krishna. And I think we should feel very happy because undeservedly we sit here.
I remember in the old times, we would be never daring to come so close to Giriraj. Do you remember how it was? Ooh, you know, you might step on a Giriraj Shila, which still every one of you should know it would be a very bad offense to do this. But somehow we have been swept here in the sacred valley of Giriraj under a Kalpa Briksha tree. From whatever stage we have come, it is undeserved compassion. I always feel I'm only dressed up like a devotee. Only my hair are too long for a devotee. Otherwise, I have everything. But the heart is of a non-devotee. So we should feel, it's good to feel like this, I feel. Because Trinadapi Suniche Na attracts more mercy than Aham Wonderful. I'm wonderful. Now, since we talk on compassion in Vrindavan, I want to talk also about Radharani's compassion. There's something very important you must know about Srimati Radharani's compassion. And I will go with you to the Ujjwala Nilamoni, where Vrinda Devi tells Purnamasi, "Oh Devi, someone as compassionate as Radha cannot be found. One day she saw a newly born calf had its mouth pierced by a blade of grass, and shedding tears of compassion, she smeared its lips with kumkuma." So, this is a proof of compassion. Now, Jiva adds that this was a special calf. The calf was born to one of Krishna's favorite cows. This shows that Radha is more compassionate to someone or something who pleases and serves Krishna. If you wish to obtain the compassion of Radharani, make sure that you are serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. Then it will come very easily. But non-connected people will not so easily get the mercy of Radharani. You must have a connection with Krishna. Yeah. There's a verse in Chatupashpanjali, which I read this morning. Radharani, your heart is like a lake which flows over with the waves of compassion. Oh, please, Radharani, let your mercy flow in my heart and be somewhat satisfied with this person who wants so much to become your servant. Hare Krishna. So, Brahma thinking a little bit about the mercy of Krishna, but he feels
The devotion of the Vrajvasis deserves a better remuneration than the hatred of the demons. And if Krishna already gave himself to Putana for only being a disguised, a fake devotee, you know, coming disguised as a devotee, what will Krishna do, possibly do, in order to reward the Vrajvasis? He goes like, and he slightly faints. Boom, I can't understand this. What will Krishna do? That will come in a moment. Brahma feels Krishna cannot absolve his debt, not even if he gives himself to the Vrajvasis, since he has done that already to Putana. What will Krishna do? Well, to some of the devotees, to the gopis, Krishna has said what he will do. He said, be satisfied with your own bhakti. I can't reward you. Here this yeya tamang prapadyante system, I reward everyone according to what he does, doesn't work. I'm defeated by you. He is powerless. Once the highest devotees of Krishna, the gopis, were highly dissatisfied with Krishna and even accused him as being cruel. And I believe, and they sat down Krishna, they set Krishna down in a tribunal of love. They said to Krishna, after Krishna had disappeared from the Rasa dance and left them crying and searching for them, they said to Krishna, Krishna, tell us very openly and analytically what type of lover you are. And the way they said it, they built up a trap for Krishna so that Krishna could only say, I'm a very cruel person. They said, answer three questions, choose, it's a multiple choice question, but the way they phrased the question only left Krishna with one choice. That is, he had to cross, I'm very cruel. They said, well, tell us, are you the lover who gives back the amount he has received? Or are you the selfless lover who just gives and gives no matter what he gets? Or are you the third choice, the lover who only receives and gives back nothing, the ungrateful wretch? Now Krishna had just shown, according to the gopis, understanding what type of lover he was. So he had, if he was honest at that moment, and he seemed to be very sincere, he would have to go into that trap. Krishna could not possibly be the lover who gives back in response to what is given to him, because he had just called the gopis. They had come, they had responded by leaving everything behind. But Krishna didn't give his sweet presence to them. He disappeared. Krishna could also not possibly be the lover who gives selflessly, because there was no question of selfless love in him. He called the gopis, making it so difficult. They had to come in the midst of the night, and he left it clear. So like the first point, first thing, Krishna could only be the ungrateful person. You give him everything and he says, and leaves. So the gopis thought, now we have Krishna. Now
His quality is shown very clearly. But because they loved him so much, they didn't want to tell them, you are cruel. They wanted that Krishna had to admit it and say it. It had to come from his mouth. So, at this moment, Krishna responded, and this may be an answer to Burijal's question, what does Krishna give to the Brijbasis? Krishna said, I'm neither of the three. Oh, now the gopis were really worked out. Now he really had, of course, he wanted to escape the trap that is not unnatural for Syamasunda. But now, where he was almost captured, they would not give in so easily, but really check his answer. Then what are you? Tell, what alternative lover are you to our three choices? And Krishna said, my purpose of lover is, I want to increase the love of my devotees. And that's why I disappeared from you, to make you cry more for me, to make you hanker more, so that the love becomes bigger. This is why Krishna also left Radharani and went to Mathura. The love of the devotees of Vrindavan is increased by this. In this relation, I want to tell you a little story from Vidyapati, and then we can meditate. Vidyapati describes in an elaborate work, Vidyapati was read by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's authorized in other words. He describes the conditions of the trees and the different residents of Vrindavan, starting with the trees after Krishna left Vrindavan. He said the trees are pale and naked, Yamuna is white from separation, the cowherd boys simply lie in with deep pangs of separation in the valleys of Vrindavan, and he describes like this. Then he tells one story. Once Radharani, she could not tolerate the separation from Krishna any longer. And one of her maidservants, Chandranana, decided she must do something against it and bring Krishna back from Mathura. So Radharani was lying on a bed of lotus flowers, which was constantly being dried up by the heat coming from her separation-inflicted body. And no matter how much cool Yamuna water was added to this, to the bed of cooling lotus flower, Radharani's pain was so intense that the leaves were slowly smoldering away. So in this condition, Chandranana came and said, you are suffering because Krishna is not here. What type of lover is there here? I will immediately go to Vrindavan, to Mathura, and bring him back. And I will go to him, and I will say to him, I will capture him with iron chains on his hand, and I will lead him through the streets of Mathura, and I will declare that Krishna has left you and is responsible for your dying. He is responsible for the death of a woman. And not only you, but so many of Krishna's. This is impossible. This is totally adharmic. I will show this. He is there as a king, but if he does not come immediately back to Vrindavan, I will capture him and lead him through the streets of Mathura. Radharani said, oh no, don't do this. Bring Syamasundar, but please do not humiliate him in the open. He is so sensitive in his heart. It will be very bad. Don't do this. Just bring him back. Okay, said little Chandranana, and went out. And after walking through towards Mathura and covering halfway, she remembered something and ran back to Vrindavan. Said to Radharani, visited Radharani and said, Do you still have that letter? What letter, said Radharani? The agreement letter. What agreement letter? That don't you remember once Krishna left you and you suffered and then you became very angry and Krishna wanted to come back but you wouldn't accept him, and then Rupa Manjari made Krishna sign an agreement letter? I mean that agreement letter. Radharani said, and then Chandranana repeated the important lines of the agreement letter which Krishna had written in order to be able to see Radharani after he had left him. The agreement said like this: I, Syama Sunda, declare herewith in writing, black and white, that I am the sole property of Radharani. And Radharani can do with me whatever she wants. Signed, Syama Sunda, son of Nanda Baba. And the time was also written. The date was there. This is the agreement letter. Oh yes, said Radharani, I have this agreement letter still. And she went and manufactured the agreement letter and gave it to Chandranana. But before she gave it, said, never force Shyama Sundar. He is so soft inside. A little suffering is not good for him. He is so soft that when the leaves fall from the trees of Vrindavan on his body, they leave an imprint. Be very tactful. Chandranana was enthusiastic. She had her paper. There was even a stamp on the paper. It was very formal and official, the agreement paper, which gave absolute power over Syama Sunda to Radharani. So now listen to the detail. So Chandranana walks towards Mathura, and she comes in the outskirts of Mathura. And you must know, the eternal associates of Lord Krishna are full of the most blissful vibration and full of the most blissful light which emanates from them. They're really special. And Chandranana, as soon as she came to the outskirts, it was known, and the queens, that a special woman had come, and the queens of Mathura immediately came and surrounded her. Who are you? You know, women very easily talk amongst themselves. Men, it is very difficult, to even if they don't know each other, they go a little suspicious this way. But women immediately go and all details are discussed very easily. Are you married or not? Immediately a free answer is given. No, but I'm planning, and it might work or not work, and so on. It's immediately very clear communication is there between women, normally. So the Chandranana was surrounded by all these queens who were highly inquisitive. Oh, I'm coming, said Chandranana, I'm coming from a place where a very powerful queen is. I am very much desirous to help my queen because she is suffering from an incurable disease. Yes, we have many good doctors, said the queens here in Mathura. May we suggest a doctor for you? May we hear the disease? Chandranana said, the disease of my queen is very intolerable. She burns alive from it. There's only one doctor who can cure this disease. This doctor is called, the name Krishna. Oh, said the ladies over. Krishna is many things. He is a warrior and he is also a king. He's not a doctor. He's not everything. No, said Chandana, he is a doctor. Have you forgotten? When he entered Mathura, he made a difficult orthopedic operation. Kupcha, the hunchback, had an incurable hunchback. Krishna just lifted her by the shoulders and cured this orthopedic failure, which is incurable. Oh yes, said the queen. Then you must see Krishna, and asked. Yes, sure, now we understand. Thank you. So then they... But Krishna does not see anyone in his palace. The palace doors are locked. Some say he is in the upper apartment, what is it called? The penthouse of the palace. And no one knows what is wrong. Some say they have heard uncontrollable sobbing from that room. We do not know. I will go and look myself, said Chandananan. Oh, said the queen, that's very difficult, because the palace is very, very safely guarded by heavy guards, and they will immediately forbid you with swords and spears. But what you can do is you can go the path of the female servants, and you can sneak into the palace, and we will tell, here goes, here there goes. And so Chandranana went in, she went through all the rooms. After all, she's a Brijbasi. She will know immediately where Krishna is by the fragrance. And went into one very lonely, large throne room where Krishna was crying. And went before Krishna. Krishna looked at her, somewhat irritated, because she made a noise of attention seeking. Said in a very sideful voice, "What are you doing here? Who are you? From where are you coming?" Chandranana looked very fiery on Krishna and said, "I want to ask you the same questions. What are you doing here in Mathura? Who are you? And from where are you coming? Mathura seems to have a very bad influence on you, because you have forgotten who you are. You have forgotten what you are doing here. This is not what you are supposed to do. Ruling. You're supposed to play at the banks of the Yamuna, attracting your dear devotees with the flute play. And you have even forgotten Vrindavan. Mathura must totally have bewildered you. Come back. Don't you know of the agreement paper which you signed?" And she produced the letter. "I, Syamasundara, hereby publicly declare I'm the sole property of Radharani. She has all the powers over me." Krishna was going like, "You must be Chandranana, the clever gopi." Chandranana was smiling, being extremely secure that her mission was taken care of. But inside of her mind, she remembered a word which Radharani had given her in parting. Radharani had said two words: "Don't give trouble to my Syamasundara." And the second is, if he says he cannot come to Vrindavan, at least secure a message from him, a written message. So Chandranana said to herself, "I swear he will give a reason to escape my coming." And I can't capture him and bring him through the streets because Radharani is not satisfied with this. So Krishna said, just like, he first of all began to cry in blissful ecstasy. He shouted out, Vrindavan, Vrindavan, where is my flute? And he began to remember the moonlit nights at the bank of the crystal white Yamuna. It was very, very intense and very happy and very blissful, and cried and cried. Then he stopped and said, Chandanana, I will come in a few days. Just now I still have to do some missions. To kill demons and, you know, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. I've said these things earlier. And Chandranana said, Syam, we know you. This way, that way, this way. Never straight, huh? Anyways, Radharani has said, I will now do something. You stay here and listen. Do you know what is the condition of the inhabitants of Vrindavan? Do you know what is the condition of the trees? They are all without leaves. Really? Said Krishna. Do you know what is the condition of your best friends, the Sakas, with whom you played ball games and wrestling? They lie in the valleys and their color is white from separation. That's absolutely, really? Do you know? This is nothing to Hari Bol. This is very intense. Jai Jai Sirade. Do you know what is the condition of your parents? There's a kennel of water flowing from the house of Nanda Bhavan to the Yamuna, which is new. This kennel is created by the tears of Nanda and Yashoda, who just look for the moment to come to you. Yashoda walks out of her house, and when she sees your red cowherding stick, which is bound with a golden thread, she just cries and adds more water to the kennel. And do you know the condition of Radha? Radha! Krishna went totally in ecstasy. And Chandanana described the condition which you know. Are you coming now, Syam? And Syam is soon again. Just now I'm coming! Just now! Just very exactly, quickly now! I just do some with my parents, Devaki and Vasudev, Charanana. My parents, Devaki and Vasudev, don't get under the Mathura influence. Yes, okay. Killing some demons. Just now I'm coming. Then Charanana said, okay, Syam Sunda, then at least write a letter. A letter, a message to Radharani so that she can survive another few days. So this is how Krishna followed that advice of Chandanana. When Chandanana was gone, he immediately called Uddhava. He described to him Vrindavan and how to get there, and he dictated a letter to the residents of Vrindavan, which Uddhava faithfully delivered. Krishna did that. So, when you hear stories like this and others, you might say, but why doesn't Krishna just come? Mathura, Vrindavan, what was it?
16 kilometers. He is very fast with the speed of mind. He just goes there, schlup. He can appear. Why doesn't he do it? Isn't it? This is what the mind thinks. And the answer is, Krishna draws out more love. And when that love of separation is there, that intense love, then Krishna meets the inhabitants of Vrindavan in a form. His bhava form, Prabhupada says. Prabhupada said, when Krishna was brought out of Mathura on the chariot of Akrura, he stayed in another form in Vrindavan, his bhava form. He's always there. This is only separation out of... out of love, Gopal might say to me, Maharaj, I'm starving with hunger, because he wishes to get some prasadam out of loving relationship, isn't it? But he's not starving. He looks very happy. It is. So when the gopis say, I leave, when Krishna is separated from the gopis, he is not really separated. There are many verses which come up in the following, which tell you how Krishna can never leave Vrindavan, how Krishna is always in Vrindavan. And that's why Brahma wants to take birth at the plant here. So Hare Krishna, Burijan Prabhu, you have successfully diverted the conversation from this verse. But in another way, Burijan Prabhu has showed us with his question, or led with his question, into a very important thing of the Bhakti Rasayana verses. This is a flow of thought. This is what is supposed to happen. We didn't contrive this question. Urijan asked in his own friendly way this question without us having discussed it previously. But when you get into these Bhakti Rasayana shlokas and you read them and become familiar with them and their purports, you will often see how from that remembrance which is strictly limited within the limit of the verse, the content of the verse, which is called technically mantra upasana, you will get into a flow. Of course, let us not overestimate our adhikas, our abilities in spiritual life. Let us also not shun the possibility that Krishna shows us mercy, and Giriraj shows us mercy. When you get in the, in other words, if you memorize a mantra and meditate or remember that mantra, some other thoughts will come which are Krishna conscious. And my dear devotees, this is the whole purpose of Krishna consciousness. Something, your mind has to become attached to Krishna and absorbed in Krishna in a natural way. If this doesn't happen, you will stay for many births and deaths in this in the material world. This must happen. I very much like the description of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who says that as you chant, you perform a Kana Beda Sanskara. It's an ear piercing ceremony. Ladies have pierced their ears so that they can put attractive rings within the hole. In case the men don't know, it's a permanent hole which is used for that purpose to put rings. In India, men are also doing this. I remember for Gaurangi's little child, Nanda Gopal, we performed the ear-piercing ceremony with a pistol, ear-piercing pistol. The man put this, it's like a pistol, it's put in here. And of course, the child began to totally flip out, you know. So Gaurangi, being very clever, put a light, you know, but this is an a Wunderkerze in his hand. This is, you put light to it and then sparks come from it. Nanda
Gopal was, and then a shot and one of the ear happened, an ear piercing ceremony. And he was mildly crying, but then Gaurangi had an even bigger thing, you know, bigger diversion ready, and then it went like kang, and then another time, and then it was over. It's not painful at that age for children. Children up to 2 years don't feel any pain really here. They just hear the noise, pang, pang, and they become irritated. So this is a Karna Veda, ear-piercing ceremony, because later some earrings need to be fixed here in the child's ear, because then, according to Vedas, the hearing is protected. Some auspicious earrings which are offered to the Lord there, and so on. It's very good. Good. We don't, in ISKCON it's not done, it's not really a Vaishnava practice as far as the Gaudiya Vaishnava practice, but it is certainly done in other Vaishnava orders. The Ramanujas are doing it. Big Brahmanas, we must have seen with this ear decoration. So Karna Veda Sanskara. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, our chanting in the beginning is like this. We must pierce the material ear, the layers of the material ear, we must pierce. But Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, chanting like this. And then after some time, the hole is there, and this Vaikuntha name will flood our soul with unprecedented ecstasy. So sometimes you must go to the, what chanters say, the desert of chanting. Tasteless chanting, you must just continue. So in the same way, this process, you can read these verses. Again, I know that only 0.5% of my audience will do it, but still, we are trying to preach. You must hear these verses, and something will come. And your flow of thought will, spiritual thought will start. The verses are put in a sequential order so that this can come about, because you are led in a very good and scientific way to deeply think about Krishna. It's wonderful, isn't it? So now we have exactly 20 more minutes left. I was thinking, of course, of another verse. But I will not do it, because I don't want to get in a hurry. What we will do now is, we will just hear this verse again of Brahma. And obviously we will try to meditate about mercy and so on. But no need to enforce it. Just hear it and make yourself familiar with Brahma's thought. One thing which you must learn in the beginning, you must learn, hear and hear nothing else than what is said in the verse. Don't do autobiographical hearing. Usually autobiographical hearing means you hear something, but in between you hear the mind, which is telling you his homemade movies all the time. I remember when I was reading, after 5 years of being in the movement, my first notebooks of lectures in Krishna consciousness. They were notes taken from Prabhupada's lecture. And I read the notebooks which I made at that time. There was an entirely different, a very mystical philosophy jumping out from the pages of the notebook. It was a mixture of Carlos Castaneda's German mysticism and Indian, red Indian wisdom, which came out of the pages. This was autobiographical hearing, obviously. Prabhupada had not said this, but I had heard it. Not from Prabhupada, but from my homemade cinema. My mind was playing this. So don't do this type of hearing when you hear the verse. Just try to say, understand, Brahma is there, and he's hearing about Putana,
No, he has most probably seen what happened to Putana, and he is really perplexed. It's a question, a serious question. Enter into this mood of Brahma. And here, this is the first, this is a very good tip. So we will have our Narada Muni again. So just listen now and think about, first of all, look at your notes if you have taken any. We will look for 2 minutes at the notes. I wouldn't try to memorize the whole story because this story doesn't really belong to any authorized explanations of this verse. It's not an explanation of this verse. Do you have 2 minutes? Okay. My mind becomes bewildered. Just trying to think of what reward other than you, Krishna, could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, who have dedicated their homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts, who have dedicated all this only to you? What can you give them? The answer is obviously Krishna can give them prema and a tremendous amount of very special braj prema. So after this, Brahma is now very, very in mixed emotions. One side of him tells him, let me pray some more. Another says, I'm so unqualified to stay at this holy place. He says, there are people who say I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. O my Lord, let me say this much only. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body and words. Then Brahma, this is Bhaktirasayana verses, says, give me your permission now to leave. I don't feel qualified here to stay any longer. I might disturb you and your residence even more. And then he makes one last prayer. So after we have heard 11 verses from Brahma, who is after all our creator, who has tuned us into the beauty of Braj, who have convinced us that Vrindavan is really special, the flow of the Rasayana verses take us to maybe the most ecstatic authority to talk on Vrindavan, Krishna himself. The next verse, which we will start with tomorrow, we are now ushered into the Vrindavan. We will hear Krishna in the midst of a beautiful pastime, talking in a very intelligent and indirect way about himself and Vrindavan, in a way which makes your hair stand on end and say, this is only how Krishna can address a subject matter. Very peculiar, very subtle, very rasic, very on many levels you will find many meanings. This is how we will continue tomorrow. This will be a little very, very nice verse, very simple also to understand. You will. And this, yeah. So, Hare Krishna. Now, we have still a little time which we want to take. Burijan Prabhu, you suggested that everyone writes something down, free writing. Can you at this stage, it doesn't mean the same notes which they have taken. Yes. So I will repeat this. But before I say, is there someone who can give a piece of paper and a pen to Harsha, because she will like to also do this. It's an interesting exercise. She's only here for one day. You didn't bring a notebook, I suppose. And Rosie also needs one. Would you like to also do this exercise, Prabhuji? Write something down, free writing? Or would you like to think about it first? Gopal, did you bring something? You're set up. Okay. The way I assess you is you want to just see what they are doing now, and then you will do. Yes. All right, so free writing, according to what we have just heard, it is very important. You just start writing, and what is in your consciousness will come out. It's not planned writing. Yes? So please start free writing now for 10 minutes.